Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me previewing Michigan versus Washington. Of course, already and then in the next coming days, there will be plenty of written previews content over at the michiganinsider.com, michigan.247sports.com. So you can get ready for the night game matchup between the Huskies and the Wolverines. Of course, if you are interested in the basketball and the recruiting side of things, we have those podcasts as well. Wherever you're getting this podcast, the odds are you can find the recent recruiting podcast, recent basketball podcast episodes. So be sure to check those out and throw us some ratings if you like it. If you like what you hear, be sure to come back. We produce 3+ podcasts every single week. Love to have a growing audience. Love to hear the positive feedback from all of you. So anyway, our preview content or preview episode is going to be similar to last week. We'll talk about keys to the game. Maybe some of the storylines that came up this week in press conferences and everything. And then we will do some predictions for the game, both at an individual level, different units, have our over-unders for the yardage and everything. And then, of course, our final score prediction. So, Steve, obviously, Washington is kind of in an interesting spot. I thought that was, I don't know if you saw the game, but I saw it kind of develop Saturday night. They lost to Montana 13-7. Took a little bit of the wind out of the sails to this matchup. But obviously, Michigan looking pretty good against Western Michigan. I think the best way to describe it is they did what they were supposed to do and a little bit more. So I think this is a matchup that kind of tilts in Michigan's favor. We'll talk about how we think it'll play out in just a moment, but your first key to the game, maybe looking at Michigan's offense.
I keep doing what they did last week. I know it's kind of a, I don't mean that as simply as I said it necessarily, but I think the biggest thing on both sides of the ball, but offensively, obviously, I think just seeing the efficient quarterback play bodes well for Michigan. I think McNamara's only two incompletions were the tip passes, the old John Navarre thing, which again, we'll see if that's a developing, if that's going to be a pattern this season, or maybe it was just a blip on the radar. No, I thought overall Michigan's offensive line played pretty solid, not perfect, but it's like I said, I wrote a couple days ago, Andrew Vistardis looking like Michigan's best offensive lineman in the first game, I think is about as good a scenario as you could ask for. Zach Zinter went in there, was effective. I know our friends at MGO Blog, Seth does a really good job with the film breakdowns, had Filiaga graded out as the top guy.
Yeah, he had a great game.
Right? So those are really good. Those are good things. Because Stuber feels dependable. Keegan was a little up and down, but between Zinter, Keegan, Filiaga, you see him, those guys in Vistardis, have such a good game to start the season. I think bodes really, really well for them going forward and the game against Washington, no different. So I think for Michigan, I think the offensive line just got to keep kind of playing the way they did because it did. Their play is what opened everything else up on Saturday. I mean, both in the run game and in the passing game. So again, to start big game against a big opponent, it always starts up front. So I think for Michigan, it's about the offensive line just kind of picking up where they left off on Saturday.
Yeah, I think that's I'll have something similar. I think this has to be a game where Michigan consistently runs the ball. I understand they ran for 330 yards against Western Michigan, their most in 5 years. But, looking at Washington's personnel, and it's early enough in the season that we don't know everyone who's going to be good, but they've got some really good defensive backs. I think there's a real chance their entire secondary is drafted in the next 2 years. I mean, Trent McDuffie is maybe one of the top two or three cornerbacks in the entire country. You know, seems like they've always had good safety play, at least in the recent ascent of Washington football. And so I am skeptical that they're going to be able to Michigan, meaning that they're going to be able to pass a ton. You know, I think Michigan almost would prefer not to even necessarily try a ton until Washington starts stacking the box a little bit. Maybe they do that from the get-go because they have guys that can cover one-on-one, but I don't know if this is a game Michigan can win with the passing game. I think it really, they did, if they're going to win offensively, it's going to be running the ball. You know, Washington, from last season, they've had a few guys depart from that linebacker and defensive front. I don't think it's a bad front seven at all, but I think it's still a little inexperienced. But quietly, Washington's defense did its job against Montana. You know, we'll talk about Washington's offense in a moment, but the defense, I mean, it's still a good unit. Jimmy Lake was a defensive guy. I think they're a defense first team right now. And so I think the big thing will just be, this is if Michigan feels like it can be a physical running game this season. And that was one thing that came up a lot in press conferences this week, because I was kind of asking these players, like, what's that like? And just to watch the offensive linemen, their face light up when you ask them, like, hey, how much fun do you get, you know, being a run blocker in this unit? And I mean, they love it. You know, this is a group I felt like it could be this kind of offensive line. And frankly, the running backs are also really physical. You know, they can live up to that billing. You know, Chuck Filiaga yesterday was telling us about, you know, sometimes the running backs will say, hey, let me get this guy. I can imagine Hassan Haskins is probably the main guy doing this, but they'll say, let that linebacker through. I want to assert some contact. And you know, the linemen, of course, aren't going to do that, but feels like Michigan has a really good physical running game. Maybe it's best of the Jim Harbaugh era. And if that is true, I think they have a pretty good chance of winning on Saturday, but I think they have to be able to establish a consistent run game. It's one thing to have a big play. It's one thing to have, you know, one drive where it's working and then one drive where it doesn't. But if they can consistently avoid maybe third and long situations, you know, try to avoid as many obvious passing downs as possible, I think that they'll be able to move the line of scrimmage just a little bit. I could see a scenario where if they're getting sacked or tackles for loss and they have to kind of chuck it downfield, I can see where that gets ugly in a hurry. Steve, your key for Michigan's defense, and I'm not going to let you say, just keep doing what you're doing. I'm going to make you be more creative than that. But your key against a Washington offense that maybe kept some things under wraps, it's hard to tell. I mean, but 7 points against Montana is just, I mean, that's almost unfathomable for a Division I team with top 20 recruiting classes year in, year out.
I say you got to cut the head off of the dragon and slow down Kate Otten, who looks like by far their best player on offense. At least he was on Saturday, but also I think probably preseason.
This is the tight end, right?
Yeah, the tight end. Yeah, looks like was, I think, projected probably to be their top guy offensively. So I think you start there. You know, he's the only guy, I mean, just solely based off the box score, but also I didn't watch much of the game. I saw the highlights, but I didn't watch it live. Three turnovers, 4.9 yards per pass on 46 attempts from Dylan Morris. Otten, more than a safety valve at the tight end position, a guy I think could give Michigan problems in the passing game, and maybe it'll open things up for everybody else. They're banged up at receiver. They rely on their passing game. Like, yeah, again, Cameron Davis, 3 catches for 29 yards. Richard Newton, 4 catches for 23 yards. I mean, those are their running backs, were like among their most targeted receivers on Saturday. It just felt very unexplosive offensive performance for them. So I think if you stop Cade Otton, I mean, the question is at that point, who else are they going to rely on? Do they make a change at quarterback too? I haven't read the boards. I've heard rumors that it's a pretty lively board at our Washington site on 24/7, but I haven't really gone over there.
Yeah, I would imagine it's pretty lively this week, right?
I would assume so. Right. are they considering a quarterback change? You know, I don't really know. I can't imagine, you know, making a change with your team traveling almost all the way across the country to play Michigan at night at the Big House. I don't know how well that would go over, or how that just seems risky, even with Morris's struggles last week. So no, for me, I think you stop Cade Otton and then you go from there, because at least based on this one game sample size, which if we're clear, a lot can change week to week early in the season. You know, we don't know a lot about a lot of teams right now still. So that being said, you know, again, I think going into the season, we would have said Otton was their best player. Slow him down, force them to find somebody else to throw the ball to, and go from there.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the easy one, because they just really don't have a ton of star power at running back, and you mentioned their receivers are pretty banged up. I mean, it is kind of crazy that at one point Giles Jackson was supposed to be their like fifth or sixth receiver, which I guess speaks to that maybe they have a pretty talented room, but at the same time, if guys are injured, guys are out, they're out. But yeah, I'm very curious about the quarterback situation, because Dylan Morris, even last season, I think they went 3-1 last season. His numbers were okay, but it was a lot over the middle of the field. He really did not show, maybe he has it, but he did not show even a Cade McNamara level arm strength. You know, he was very much, I think optimally Washington kind of uses him as a, you know, can do a lot of checkdowns, a lot of stuff in the flats, a lot of stuff over the middle of the field, and they don't really need him to sling it. And he can kind of be more of a game manager type. But the problem is they don't have a ton at in the run game either. That's really, I guess, going to be able to carry them. So I think for me, the key is, I think the linebackers, Michigan's linebackers, just have to play really well in coverage. I think Daxton Hill, I just wrote a story about him. I think he can erase a lot. I think that, you know, Michigan's secondary overall, the safety play, I thought was really impressive Saturday. Linebackers quietly got picked on a little bit in coverage. And there were a couple play sets, especially in that first quarter, maybe they ironed it out. But, you know, there were a couple plays where you could tell exactly what was going to happen, because Josh Ross, this is not a dig on Ross, it's literally just a mismatch, was lined up against a slot receiver. And so, and sure enough, it was, you know, kind of a throw over the middle of the field where, it was a completed pass and a big gain. And I felt like Michigan's zone defense open, left a couple spots a little too open, in my opinion, where a couple out routes, even on Daxton Hill, were pretty open. You know, just little pockets in the zone. So I think, without trying to say exactly what you're trying to say, I think a big thing is just, the linebackers have to hold their own in coverage. They don't need to be perfect. I think Michigan can win without necessarily perfect linebacker coverage. But if I were circling one area from Michigan's defense that I think could improve after last week, other than the continual defensive tackles providing as much push as possible, I think it would be the linebackers. Had a couple slip ups in coverage, had a couple mistakes. And I have to think Washington, based on their personnel, you know, you mentioned Otton, I'm sure they have a host of tight ends who can do similar things. It seems like they've been a pretty good tight end production program for a few years. And then the slot receivers. And so I think they'll try to create mismatches, try to create confusion over the middle of the field. And so that will be a big key. Couple other big storylines from this week. You know, Ronnie Bell, obviously out for the season with injury, wrote a story about how they plan to replace him. They do plan to make it a group effort. And I think my story kind of singled out each player and what they can bring that Ronnie Bell used to bring. And Steve, I don't know about you. This isn't, I don't mean this in a, as any offense to Ronnie Bell, but quietly, not maybe the devastating loss that it might be when you write the sentence, Michigan's 2019 and 2020 leading receiver, Ronnie Bell, who's also a captain, out for the year with injury. Feels like they have the pieces to still be a very high quality wide receiver room. In fact, my expectations for the room are relatively unchanged. Real quick, just your thoughts on who can step up and maybe how that changes expectations for the receiver room.
So we talked about this preseason, that receiver, there were a couple positions, receiver, offensive line, where Michigan had the depth to withstand an injury, maybe more so than they've had in past years. The addition, the Dalen Baldwin addition, you know, makes that even easier, or makes that even, you know, makes that even less of an issue, I think. The only thing is Ronnie Bell looked amazing when he was in. That's the only, like, I'm with you all the way. I think that they can replace that production, but I mean, he looked as valuable as he's been to Michigan the last couple of years. I mean, he looked improved just in the short time that he played on Saturday. So a loss from that regard. Everybody listening knows I'm a big AJ Henning person. He showed why with the 76-yard touchdown run. I feel like he's a guy that just, you know, we didn't hear like a ton about him in fall camp, but coaches have talked about some guys that just play better and over practice. I think Haskins is a guy they've mentioned. Because I kind of wonder if Henning is similar, because man, when he's in there, he just looks like the type of guy who could break one open at any point. So, you know, I think Henning would be one of the first guys I'd think of. Roman Wilson also got a nice, again, run, but he's somebody who has plenty of experience from last season, one of the more experienced freshmen, you know. So, and Sainer still, who rightfully so, I think someone on our board made a point to mention this, and I noticed this during the game, really didn't make a dent in the box score from a receiving standpoint, but was excellent on the edge blocking, yep. Right? There's a ton of the guys that block at that position are going to play. So I don't think I think he had the bubble screen from McCarthy that went for negative yardage. I think that was his only catch. You know, despite that, he's going to keep playing just because of his value there. And again, that doesn't mean, you know, still think he has a lot of value catching the football too, but so yeah, that's the value of like having it. Oh, Andrell Anthony also played a decent amount of snaps at the end of the game and is somebody that, you know, maybe we'll see him in more high leverage situations going forward. So yeah, no shortage of guys that could kind of step into that role. I think really the bigger question is who is that? Who's it going to be? You know, we know Cornelius Johnson is going to be a starter. I suspect Sainer will still be on the field a lot. Like I said, because of his blocking ability will allow him to be on the field and maybe make plays in the passing game too. But who will kind of be that third guy and third and fourth guy? Like there's so many different candidates that it does make, as valuable as Bell has been, it's not as big a blow. And let's say if, I don't know, like a Jamon
Green. Well, Josh Ross.
Or a Josh Ross or a Vincent Gray was to get hurt. You know, it's like there might not be the same level or amount of like capable guys that are ready to step up in their stead.
Yeah. And they have the bodies to rotate to, so it's not like here's all the pressure on one player to do really well. By the way, won't get a lot of sympathy, Michigan fans, from Washington fans for receiver injuries. I just looked over dogman.com, I think is our Washington site. They have more tight ends listed in the depth chart than wide receivers right now. They have 7 tight ends listed, tight end / fullbacks listed in their depth chart. They have 4 wide receivers listed in their depth chart. So they're hurting as well. Another storyline, I guess, just general question. does this suddenly become a bit of a trap game? I mean, Michigan, they did talk the talk in not letting Washington's surprising loss, I guess, get to them or change how they approach. And, you know, Joel Honigford, he knew his audience last night. He was talking to us and he said that, you know, he's asked about still taking Washington seriously. He said, honestly, we're just trying to treat every week like we're trying to beat Ohio State that week. And so obviously that's something that's music to the fans' ears. But Steve, I can't help it personally. When I'm looking at this game, I have a very hard time. Any sort of story about Washington's offense has just this huge grain of salt that's like they scored 7 points against Montana. And Dylan Morris, you know, there were talk about four-star recruit. Certainly had some good moments last season, but 3 interceptions, no touchdowns. QBR of 8.9 out of 100. So I guess in your mind, is there any concern on your end of Michigan maybe not taking this game as seriously? I think one thing that helps is that it's early in the season, so there's still a lot of early season energy and optimism. But any reason, does that add to the concern? Or does Washington losing actually decrease your concern because, well, frankly, they didn't look very good? I guess I'm just curious about your thoughts because that's obviously a big team-wide storyline to keep an eye on.
It's a night game. Big House will be louder than it's been in over almost two full calendar years. I just have a hard time believing they're not going to come with the energy. You know, this is, I suspect, was the early season game that they had circled on their calendar, right? All the recruits are going to, you know, there's going to have a ton of recruits. Big time. Best visitor list I can remember. We'll have more on that in the site, you know, leading up into Saturday. There's too many reasons for that to not happen for me to believe that it's a real possibility. And I don't think it's relevant whether Washington laid an egg last week, or maybe if they're just not as good as people thought. I'd just be very surprised if, you know, they've always played really well at night at home anyway. So yep. I just think they're going to be too amped up. Just, I think the energy level in the stadium is going to be, you know, like I said, as high as it's been in 2 years. I just think they're going to be amped up and ready to go regardless of what, you know, if what Washington did last week was the real Washington or just an egg that got laid.
Yeah. I think I can get on board with that. I think one thing that actually helps Michigan is it's very easy to literally just look at last season when Michigan beat Minnesota on the road. It's looking like a ranked team, and Michigan State out of nowhere loses to Rutgers, I believe for the first time in their history. If it wasn't first time in their history, a very rare, unexpected loss to Rutgers. And then what happens the next week? Well, they meet in the Big House and Michigan State kind of punches them in the mouth. And so I think there's a small part of me that if Washington comes in the first quarter and just looks really prepared, is executing at a high level, and it's just kind of playing some smash mouth football, that I could see Michigan maybe being a little rattled, a little surprised, but you're right. The energy will be there at the start. There will be fans in the stands, which there wasn't last season. And honestly, I mean, Washington can't change their team overnight. I mean, they can get a couple guys healthy. They have a five-star quarterback on the bench. They have a highly productive grad transfer quarterback as well, who played at Colorado State, I think, most recently. So maybe there's small things they could change, but the fact is they worked all fall, and even if they were totally focused on Michigan, they should still have been able to beat Montana and put up more than seven points. So it's just something that I've been asked a couple times, like, does that add to the worry, decrease the worry? I think I'd probably call it around even. You know, I think the my confidence in Michigan winning is probably about the same. I think the confidence, or the chance that I would give Michigan of winning in a blowout fashion, is now higher. But in terms of like actual percent chance of winning, I'm probably about the same. We're going to hit a quick break on the other side. We are going to do our predictions for this game. You're listening to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
And we're back. Thanks for waiting. So we actually got predictions sent to us this week, Steve. Our good friend Neil sends us these things every week. He missed us last week because we record a little bit earlier than we used to. But getting started, there'll be four over-unders in total. On the offense, oh, by the way, you beat me by four last season, 39-35 out of 74. So maybe don't take these to the bank. We're both about 50-50. On the offense, 239.5 yards passing for Michigan's quarterbacks combined. So they get to 240 or more or less. Your thoughts?
Oh boy, good number. Always has some good numbers.
He's way better at the numbers than I am.
Yeah. I'll say under. You're actually the one that kind of convinced me with the stats earlier, and I already know. Yeah, their defensive backfield. Those guys were all pretty heavily recruited. Also, they're not just good. They're guys I remember from the recruiting process. So, I suspect Michigan will have a little bit more difficulty throwing the ball than they did against Western Michigan.
Yeah, I think you know, the one thing is that they might be in more situations where they need to pass. You know, Western Michigan, they probably could have gotten away with passing like 10 times in that game, and they only passed 17 times. But I'm going to say under as well. I think there's a good chance that it's over if the game is close, or I guess, you know, Michigan's trailing. Just feel like when they do pass, you know, there aren't going to be Dalen Baldwin type plays that go off for 69 yards. There aren't going to be that many Ronnie Bell type passes that go off for 70. I mean, that was like basically those two plays were half their passing yards last week. So feel like there aren't going to be those broken type plays. I think if they do pass, it'll be more of a 8 yards per attempt, 10 yards per completion, something in that window. And in that case, I just don't think they're going to throw that much. So I'm going to say under. Blake Corum. Oh, this is an interesting one. Blake Corum with 1.5 more carries than Hassan Haskins. So does he get two more carries or more than Haskins? Doesn't feel like this will be too consequential to the result of the game, but that is an interesting look. Has Corum maybe taken a slight edge over Haskins after last week, just in terms of number of carries that he's going to get?
I'll say under. I think Haskins is the guy this week. I think we might see a little bit of back and forth in that regard. I don't know if it was a hot hand thing last week or what, but Haskins was also effective too. The thing about Haskins, he's called upon in like a lot of situations where the likelihood of like breaking one or gaining 20 yards is unlikely. Short yardage stuff. We've talked about how He's one of the best, if not the best in the country at falling forward or not losing yardage, you know? So I think he's so valuable and again, almost becoming underrated based on Corum's performance last week. People are saying Corum should be the number one guy. I'm going to go under. I think Haskins plays a bigger role this week against just a power five front seven.
Yeah, I'm going to say under as well. I think Haskins will end up with more carries. One caveat one thing I would add to what you said, which I think is largely correct, is I can't help but wonder if Michigan was maybe saving Haskins a little bit for this week. Not so much like trying to not have him play at all and avoid injury, but more in the sense of lower the number of carries, lower the mileage that he endures in week one, so that maybe you can lean on him if you need to for 20 plus carries in week two. I don't know that isn't something that like I've been hearing or whatever, but small hypothesis, just because the way he runs is a lot more physically taxing than the way Blake Corum runs in general. If we're speaking, you know, who's taking the most contact in a game, it's going to be Haskins in most cases. You know, Corum, I think he's stronger than people give him credit for. I think he can go between the tackles and, you know, bowl over a linebacker, things like that. But I think I'm with you. I kind of feel like this could be a big, I think Michigan might have even in game planning thought, okay, have him work really hard, have him do a lot for us against Washington. Don't really need him to do a ton against Western Michigan and Northern Illinois and maybe not even Rutgers. You know, it's almost like a big game Haskins type approach. And to his credit, he has done well in big games. Some of his highest carry, highest production games have been against Penn State, against Alabama. Those are the only two that come up to me off the top of my head, but I'm sure there's a couple other ones where I know he's had really big games and taken a lot of carries. Notre Dame, actually, he had a great game against Notre Dame. So, yeah, I'm going to take the under. I think this is a game that Haskins gets a lot of carries. 69.5 yards for Michigan's leading receiver. I'm just going to quickly say under. If I'm saying under for 240 passing yards, the odds that one guy gets all of those. Now, one play would change that, but gonna take the under. I think they still try to spread the ball around. And without Ronnie Bell, is there definitely a go-to that they're going to throw to 6-7 times in this game? Your thoughts, Steve?
I'm going to say over. I think Cornelius Johnson, you know, he was a little quiet.
Pick to pop.
Against Western Michigan, I think he has a good game. But I agree. I mean, I know I'm picking them to go under on the yardage, but I think Johnson has a good game. I think he's, like I said, I think he steps up a little bit. And maybe it's a big play or something, but I think he gets there.
Yeah, he had a quiet game one, 3 targets. I think one was tipped. 2 catches for 15 yards. Still, he was my breakout pick for the season. So, or one of my few, but probably my main one. And so we'll see what he can do in this game. Number 4, Michigan runs on first down 74.5% of the time. Boy, that seems like a high number, but without knowing the statistics and thinking that this will be a run first offensive game plan, I'm kind of tempted to take the over on this one. I don't know what the historical statistics are for this. I'm going to say over. What do you think? 74.5%.
Under, just because that's such a high number. I could see it being close, but because again, Michigan has run the ball. Looks like they are going to be a run first offense. Washington probably a little bit weaker in the front seven than the back four. Makes sense to run the ball to, you know, give yourself maybe opportunities to loosen up that defensive backfield, but I still think it'll be a little bit lower than that. That's a pretty high number.
Fair enough. Moving to the defense, Michigan forces 7.5 tackles for loss and sacks. Now that's a very high number. Last week, they only had 3 tackles for loss, one of which was a sack, but apparently Montana had 11. That really surprises me. I don't have Pac-12 Network. I wasn't able to watch the game, But that number really surprised me because I thought this Washington offensive line was supposed to be really good. You know, maybe one of the better ones Michigan faces all season. I'm going to say under. I don't know if Michigan's that kind of havoc. I mean, they only had three against Western Michigan. I got to think Washington, even if they struggle, has a better offensive line than Western Michigan. I'm going to take the under that. I don't know the last time Michigan had 7.5 or 8 plus tackles for loss. What do you think?
Oh, boy. Yeah, I just went and looked at the box score. Man, Montana does that on the road. Michigan gets them at home. I'll still say under. I agree. Your logic is sound. But again, much like the percentages on the run first, I think they'll get close, but I don't think they'll surpass. So to say they go under doesn't mean I think they're only going to get like a few or a couple. I do think they accumulate some. I just don't know if they get that many.
Yeah. One that I will take the over on is this next one. 9.5 tackles for Nakai Hill-Green and Josh Ross combined. I feel like these two are going to combine for 10 tackles a game all season. So, yeah, I'm going to take the over on 9.5.
Fully agree. No, yep. Really no expanding on that one. I mean, that's, you know, suspect teams are still going to try to run the football on them. Given what we, you know, talked about the defensive interior, it's still kind of, I think the jury's still out on how they even really played on Saturday. You know, Ross was great against the run. Hill Green also, like, I thought Hill Green for the most part played really well. Like the one big whiff he had, he was, I think he was readjusting, like looking back to the sidelines for a call when the ball was snapped. I think he was a little off guard there, but otherwise I thought he played pretty well. So yeah, I think those guys are in line to, like you said, probably accumulate quite a few tackles throughout the season.
Slightly more, I guess, could go either way on this. 4.5 pass breakups plus interceptions for the secondary. I won't predict interceptions. Those are too hard to predict, but I do think they'll get to 5 pass breakups. I don't know. I imagine Washington will throw a decent amount, and Michigan's secondary does seem to be improved from last season. It can change in an instant, but felt like Vincent Gray was better at getting his hand on some of these passes. And Jamon Green, if they target him, they didn't target him a ton last week, but if they target him, I think he can. And Dax Hill, I think, is another guy who can, you know, they can try throwing at him, but I think he's going to be able to impact some of these passes. So I'm going to take the over. That's a high pass breakup interception number, but I'm going to take the over on that one.
I'll go under. But again, a lot of these are like, I think they'll probably get 3 or 4. I just don't think they quite get to 5. So,
yeah,
I'll go with the
over. Fair enough. Last one, defense allows 2.5 plays of 20 yards or more. Apparently, Washington only had one against Montana. Boy, that is just... I'm going to say...
Hey, to interrupt, where are we at? I mean, with this, because it's like these stats are like mind blowing almost how ineffective Washington was.
Like, were they trying to lose
offensively? Right. That's part of the plan. I watch the highlights and you see the box score. This has been a very difficult game to kind of approach from a breakdown standpoint, because this is a team that a lot of people saw as a dark horse to win the Pac-12, not just win their division, but win the whole conference. It's just,
yeah.
Did they really just, you know, did they completely just lay an egg, or is this, you know, it's going to be, I think Saturday is a very fascinating game. Didn't mean to interrupt, but just we're reading these stats and it's like, they were just that bad, statistically anyway. And it didn't look any better, from what I saw. It's just, I can't imagine being a Washington fan right now trying to figure out like what the hell happened.
Against right. Well, team, and unlike some of these FCS upsets, it was all one-sided. Like, the defense did its job. It was the offense that just could not do anything in a game against a team that they probably should have been able to do a lot. You know, they returned a starting quarterback. They returned a tight end. They return, I want to say, 3 or 4 starting offensive linemen. You know, the receiver and running back, they did have a lot of change in the last year or so. But, man, oh, man, how could you just one play of 20 yards or more against Montana? You know, at some point, don't you just kind of throw Hail Marys downfield and hope that your speedy receivers get there. But anyways, 2.5 is kind of a low number. I'm going to say over just because it's a low number. But I do think Michigan's gotten better at big play defense. I don't know if they're going to hold Washington to that. I guess we'll see. Maybe Washington's offense really is that bad, but that just seems otherworldly for Washington to get through two games this season and only have three plays of 20 yards or more. You take an over or under?
I'm with you on this one. Just for the pretty much for the same reason. I mean, it's just like I said, it's just like I can't fathom that they're really that bad. I just can't foresee a scenario where they completely repeat their performance from last week, despite the fact that they're playing a much better opponent. They're traveling all the way across the country. I just got to think that they're steel in their spines, as Harbaugh probably would say, if he was their head coach. Yeah. You know, it's like, there's talent there. They are banged up a little bit on the outside, but there's talent there. I have a hard time foreseeing a repeat performance from them.
Have to think they spent a healthy amount of fall camp preparing for Michigan too. And perhaps even more than they spent preparing for Montana, if I'm being blunt. I mean, so I guess we'll see. All right. Finally, those are our over unders. Thanks to Neil for sending those. Final, I guess, score prediction. That's all we do, right? Is kind of our thoughts on the game and then our score prediction.
Yes, sir.
All right. Your thoughts.
Michigan, too good at home at night. I'm trying not to overthink Washington's performance. Again, I think they'll play better, particularly offensively, than they did against Montana, but I don't think it's going to be enough. I just think Michigan, too amped up at home. Their star players were their star players last week. I think that's such one of the best signs for Michigan last week, was that Daxon Hill and Aiden Hutchinson both looked like NFL players on the field. And there's so much value to what that can do for the rest of the unit. I think that's really important for them in the bigger games. And I think it'll show on Saturday. So offense still kind of continues along. I don't think they're not going to run for 300 plus, but I do think they're effective. I think McNamara continues to play a strong, sound brand of football. I'll say Michigan, the spread's all the way to 7. I think Michigan wins relatively comfortably. I'm going to say something like 31-17. I think they pull away, either they pull away or they pull ahead early and just kind of cruise, or they pull away maybe with a late touchdown to sometime like, I don't know, midway through the fourth quarter or something. 31-17.
Sure. I think this game gets a little dicey if Michigan can't run the ball. I think I've alluded to that enough. So that will be something that I'll be keeping an eye on in the first quarter. I have to think Washington will, at least defensively, bring it. I don't know if Michigan's defense, although I certainly really come away feeling differently now that I've seen how they can use Daxon Hill and Aiden Hutchinson. Really liked him in a stand-up role. I thought that was, and he's definitely slimmed down a little bit. He looks like someone who's just scratching the surface of what he can do in that edge role. And I feel the same way about Hill. Washington doesn't really know what to expect out of Michigan's defense. They did not look good against Montana. Have a very hard time seeing them putting together several drives where they can really push, keep Michigan on their heels. Will be interesting to see with a bigger, better offensive line on paper, at least, how Michigan's defensive front does. But this feels like a game Michigan should win. I'm going to say 27-14. The Wolverines win. So we have the same margin, scoring margin or close to it, but I still curious to see how Michigan's offense looks against a better defense on paper than what Western Michigan brings to the table. Anyways, that'll do it for us. For Steve Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. Hope you had fun. Hope you learned something, and stay tuned for the post-game episode shortly after the game's conclusion. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road.
With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.